John 1, 35 to 39. The next day, John again was standing with two of his disciples, and as he watched Jesus walk by, he exclaimed, "Look, here is the Lamb of God." The two disciples heard him say this, and they followed Jesus. When Jesus turned and saw them following, he said to them, "What are you looking for?" They said to him, "Rabbi," which translated means teacher, "where are you staying?" And he said to them, "Come and see." They came and saw where he was staying, and they remained with him that day. So in this passage, what's communicated to me is Jesus was doing far more than just inviting them to hear him preach and teach, but he was inviting them into an ordinary day, his ordinary life, and the experience in its fullness. So kind of whole life discipleship. Come and see. It really is sort of crystallizes for me what mentoring is. Come and see. And one of the ways this got manifested most specifically in my own ministry was through hospitality. That tends to be one of my highest spiritual gifts. And so I'd often invite people over to my home. I happen to have a great parsonage here in the Nashville area, and I'd often have community meals once a week. Invite people, especially young people. If you cook it, they will come. So it's always really delightful and meaningful to have people in my home. It created some safe spaces and green places for conversation about important things, and time for conversation about important questions in what I hope was, again, a safe place. So hospitality was one way that I invited people, young people, to come and see. And, my impression is, and it's not just limited to young people, but there's a desire for intimacy of relationship, especially among our millennials, a desire to do life with other people at a deep level. A desire to find that safe space, that green space, where you can ask questions that might be off the grid a bit, or not conservative, or not politically savvy. But where do we talk about these kinds of things? I think Jesus sets the model for come and see. Let's do life together. Let's walk the journey together. I think young people are looking for places where they can be honest with their struggles and doubts, their questions again. And I also think it's a place where young people can be shaped and formed to participate in something that's bigger than their own agenda or their own life journey. And I think millennials especially are longing for that. The baby boomers have the reputation of being attracted by consumerism and materialism and kind of climbing the ladder of success and accumulating possessions. And millennials, I don't find, are very attracted by that. They'll much rather work as a barista at Starbucks part-time and then participate in ministry the other half of the week. This is more important to them to work to live versus live to work. So I think that's what Jesus invited the disciples, the kind of life he invited them into as well. Other examples of come and see in Scripture, if you look in the Old Testament, I think of Elijah and Elisha. They became connected in 1 Kings, and then in 2 Kings, the Lord took Elijah, and the mantle of his leadership and ministry fell on Elijah. But during that time, Elijah was mentoring his protege, Elisha. And then in the New Testament, I think primarily of Barnabas and Paul. Paul was rather suspect in the New Testament church since he was persecuting the church, but became a believer, and Barnabas kind of locked arms with him and helped kind of pave the way for him to be a viable leader and missionary in the church. So those are two kind of big examples. Of course, Barnabas and Paul eventually split, right? They had the conflict over John Mark after that first missionary journey, and Barnabas decides to give John Mark another chance and takes him one way, and Paul enlists Silas and Timothy and others, and they go another way. So maybe the point I want you to take away from that is they didn't give up. They started with this mentoring relationship that unfortunately kind of ended a little bit poorly, but they didn't give up on the possibilities for this holy kind of friendship and partnership. So there can be some bumps along the way, but don't give up, okay? So mentor mentee relationships can you point out in Scripture, Old Testament or New? Not going to sleep on me after lunch, are you? Anybody else?
What about Eli in the temple?
Eli and Samuel? Sure. Young man in the temple, trying to pave the way for his role as priest, taking his place. I think of Moses and Joshua. Maybe Samuel and David as well, Eli and Samuel. Sometimes I think Andrew was a mentor to his brother Peter in the faith, at least in the New Testament.
Would you include Jesus and his 12?
Indeed. Wow, the answer is Jesus. Great. Sure. So I think there are a lot of examples. Let me ask you this. So this is kind of our focal scripture, the come and see. Who in your life might have invited you to come and see? You think about that just for a minute and maybe be willing to share who's fulfilled this role for you. Come and see, do life with me, let me mentor you or invest in you. Can you think of one or two people that you might name? And she was assigned to you.
She was assigned
okay.
to me, yeah.
Okay, but it turned out to be a really great fit. You flourished under her. Okay, good.
The potential that we're tapping in a smaller church is that a church can actually either inadvertently or intentionally mentor people through their involvement. And I think you need to be really intentional, but it's like, especially people who work with children and youth, teaching them how to be effective in their example, their mentoring, their integrity. And I'm not sure that's been a really tapped potential because it looks so much, but especially we've been in a really large church, now we're in a smaller to medium church. And as you get this concept that the power of the small church will be is that multi-generations can do a lot more than they think they can in mm-hmm. that role.
Just doing life together, you can mentor yes. people and marriage and life, and
especially senior adults don't realize that they can affect the very young with what they have to offer. The very young can learn respect, civility, and faith from them if we'll just make that awareness. I was giving an example. The lady said that we have some kids and they love to play. Our halls are narrow, and she said, you know, she told the kids real nicely, be real careful around our senior adults. And the little girl goes, yes, the ones with sticks especially. We have a lot of those on walkers.
Yeah.
And so they get it that, I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily mentoring, but it's an awareness which says there is that interconnectedness within a body, a community of believers, you might say.
Good. Thank you. Anybody else? Well, I would say that if you'd asked me that question, 15 years ago, I'd be hard-pressed to say who my mentor might have been or someone who had invited me to come and see. I didn't have someone who was investing in me regularly that was in the flesh. But one thing that I did have was some folks who invested in me indirectly. And we'll go to direct mentors to indirect mentors. But this is Richard Foster. I'm not sure if you're familiar with some of his books. But when I was a college student, Celebration of Discipline was kind of rising to the top of the bestseller list. it really shaped the way I thought about vitality in the Christian life, the spiritual disciplines as a means to be in closer connection with Christ. So that was really formative for me. And then the other book that he wrote that really shaped me was Freedom of Simplicity, where he talks about pushing against, again, the consumerism and materialism in our society and living differently. He would say things like, you don't have to have the latest fashions. Hey, you can borrow a book from the library or enjoy public spaces. You don't have to spend money to have fun. Or, you know, you really don't need the latest and greatest electronic gadget to make your life fulfilling. And so a lot of these things just really nested in my heart and mind and have carried on my philosophy of life and ministry. So Richard Foster was an indirect mentor. I can think of other folks through books who've been my mentors. Frederick Buechner, Presbyterian pastor, Eugene Peterson, many of us have read. He's beloved. I think of the rather mystic Kathleen Norris, a writer and more a writer of literature and memoirs. And then, let's see, I put one other person down here, Gordon Smith, who's now the president of Ambrose, our Canadian school, who wrote a lot about discernment and at a time when I was really seeking that particular discipline. So these are some people that have really been indirect mentors for me. How about you? How about folks, let's think out of the box a little bit, that might have mentored you through books or other means? I've shaken Richard Foster's hand once, but I don't know him. But I feel like I know him and I've been mentored through his teachings. And what about you?
I had a retired pastor in my first pastorate. That was back in the days when you didn't talk about mentors and this type of thing. But Otto Willison was a great encouragement to me as a brand new pastor starting out. And he helped me in those years.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, I would say Dr. Boone as well. I'm an Olivet grad, and I came from a part of the country that's pretty legalistic, at least my local congregation was, and that's kind of what I went to college with, carrying with me, was that kind of perception of what it meant to be Nazarene. And from his actual voice, to his mannerisms, to his message of grace that I had never heard before, found influence, and maybe the reason I stuck the church rather than just saying, wow, I'm just not good enough.
Good.
Yeah.
I put Dr. Boone down there. We knew each other on an acquaintance level in Kansas City. He would come and teach at the seminary when I was pastoring there, and had an unfortunate departure from my church in Kansas City. And at that time, he was just familiar with the church and what had happened, and made an effort to call me and check in on me. And I even made a trip up to Chicago. I had some friends who had moved there to just reflect and think about the next step. And, you know, he took about 2 hours to have coffee with me and chat and just listen to sorrow. And also encourage me in my journey. And of course, he's kind of kept in touch with me over the years. When I was in Raleigh, he had mentioned to me that he'd given my name to the district assembly, district superintendent here in Nashville. He said, I think this little church could be a good fit for you, so I'm going to pass on your name. And that's where I ended up. So, you know, just these little touches over the years. We haven't had a lot of direct contact. But I've just appreciated him, you know, checking in from time to time, writing me a note, saying, how are you doing, or is there any way I can encourage you? So specifically meaningful when a guy who's that busy really invests in you. Some other folks here. This is my friend Helen. She was a part of a contemplative prayer group that I was participating in here in Nashville. It was folks mostly older than me. which my church in Nashville, I was the old person in the church. I think I count on one hand the number of people older than me, and I didn't have to use all five digits. So this was really a rich environment for me to be in. We'd meet weekly, Helen and another woman, Carolyn. We would do things outside of the group, but it was just a really rich conversation around scripture and prayer and life. And so she, I would consider her a mentor to me. She also taught me how to bake bread, which we would have for communion every week at Christ Community, Blakemore. Can't figure out where I am. Now in Kansas City, Connie Wilson, I've asked her specifically to be my spiritual director, so we meet monthly. She was recommended to me by our professor of spiritual formation, Doug Hardy, who knows her. And we met and chatted, and it's been a really great connection. As much as I do journal, I don't journal every day, but I just take my gleanings once a month to her, and we sit for a couple of hours and just chat about themes in my life for that month, and she asks some leading questions. She'll suggest some spiritual practices that might help me at that particular moment to experience Jesus more abundantly. So those are some people who've impacted me both indirectly and then directly. Would anybody else like to have a thought about who's invested in you or invited you to come and see?
I'll say indirectly. When I was in college, I kind of religiously listened to Erin McManus's podcast, and I really felt like he's very personable in his messages and tells a lot of stories of his family. And I ended up meeting him at some conference thing I was at one time, and I shook his hand, and I just thought, man, this is so weird. I know so much about you, and I feel like you've changed my life so much, but you have no idea who I am. But, I feel like he has.
Yeah. So is everyone familiar with him? He pastors out in California, Mosaic Church, and has a podcast. You can download it for free, I think. So you still listen to him?
I don't anymore.
Okay.
I don't.
Yeah.
So someone that indirectly mentored me, and then now I know very well in person, is Charles Campbell. He's a homiletics professor at Duke Divinity School. He used to be at Columbia Theological Seminary. And so kind of in my preaching class at SNU, Steve Green, he assigned his book, and it was very formational for me. And later I studied under Chuck at Duke, and now work with him on teaching and preaching, and just the ways that he writes about the powers and principalities, and the pulpit being a place to expose where the powers are at in the world so that we can envision and imagine God's alternative, has been like one of the most dominant theological themes in my preaching and ministry. So he's really shaped me.
So I just want you to see there's a whole constellation of ways that we can be mentored or mentor others, and it doesn't have to, fit a certain box. So just be thinking broadly about that for your own ministry and life, how you're mentored and how you mentor others. I want to go on to this next slide, if I can figure it out. Finding and identifying your mentors or even mentees. And I put as the kind of overarching title here, mentoring as art. Versus a science. Sarah mentioned that she was assigned a mentor and that it worked out great. But I've heard a lot of stories of people who are assigned a mentor and it's a disconnect, right? The chemistry is not there. And I put that here. Personal chemistry is so important. So when you're thinking about mentoring someone or being mentored by someone, pay attention to chemistry. It's a little hard to define, but maybe you can help me with this. If I were to say pay attention to chemistry, who have you had chemistry with and who have you not had chemistry with? What might you give as examples of that?
I'm sorry, I'm laughing because I'm thinking of a person that might be in attendance at PalCon.
Okay,
who
well.
I haven't had a lot of chemistry with.
Okay, all right.
That's why I was laughing out loud. I'm not saying the name.
Oh, okay. She's talking about someone here at PalCon she doesn't have a lot of chemistry with.
Yeah. Who could have potentially served in a mentoring type role.
For you?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
I think for me personally, I tend to have more chemistry with older people than with people my own age. So, I don't know, I just like connecting with people that are older than me.
Mm-hmm. And Patrick?
I would say it's just because I love him very much and owe him a lot. But my senior pastor boss, Steve Estep, was brilliant and gave like a great opportunity to pastor under him. And learn and respect so much and I'm incredibly friends with. But our philosophies and ministries are just different enough so that it was very beneficial to see God a mentor elsewhere where on paper he'd be in a perfect place and most set up to meet him.
Okay. Well, so let's talk about some of these other things too. A lot of times when young people are thinking about taking a ministry assignment and they're like, how do I know if I should take this assignment? How do I know if I'll work well with this person? And I usually say, well, look at the books on their shelf in their office. See what they're reading. Are those books that you are interested in or authors that really resonate with you or not? That could be a clue. So, you know, ask a mentor if you think you have some personal chemistry with them. What are some of the books, their favorite books, their favorite authors? Because that helps you understand their philosophy of ministry, right? Or even their philosophy of life. How do they relate to their spouse if they're married or their kids? You know, some people are in more traditional marriages, hierarchical, and that works for some people. Other people are in more egalitarian marriages, and that is a better fit for them. Similar ministry philosophy or life philosophy. I think this is kind of important. Now, it's not a deal breaker. I mean, you can certainly get over some of these challenges. But in general, I would say look for these characteristics in someone that you would ask to mentor you or you would be mentored by. Someone you can be honest with. I think that's so important for our younger people, again, to have those safe havens or green spaces where they feel like, hey, you know, do you wholeheartedly 100% agree with the doctrines of the Church of the Nazarene? No, I don't. I have trouble with this one or this one. Is that okay? Well, let's just talk about it. Let's talk about it. You know, what are you struggling with? I might not have all the answers, but someone you can be honest with about these kinds of conversations, have questions with. Maybe similar hobbies or interests. I would like to have a mentor who likes coffee, to a coffee shop, you know. But maybe a better mentor for you would be someone who plays golf or likes to talk sports or, I don't know, is captured by movies and media, that kind of thing. So look for some similar hobbies. Teachability. I think this is important on both ends. I think both you as a mentee seeking a mentor need to be willing to be taught by that person, but also sense that they too want to learn from you and are teachable as well.
Maybe also just kind of be prepared to be surprised because this couple came to our church. She's African American and her husband's Caucasian and they're a military couple. And we started talking and it has become a mentoring situation. I think a lot of times when people see us out, wonder why we're laughing so much. So sense of humor can be another one of those things. And she's probably 15 or 20 years younger. And yes, there is honesty, but it's guarded sometimes because she goes to our church and I'm a pastor's wife. But it's amazing what God can do when you're not really expecting those kinds of times. But I think they're also because our daughter and our son-in-law, he became a Christian and is mentored by the pastor. Well, then naturally, the pastor's wife was supposed to mentor her, and she's already established a Christian. That did not go well for about 9 months to a year. It was a strain for both of them. But somehow God has worked through that, and they're on a better footing. But I know my daughter wanted to say, we don't have anything in common, and this doesn't work. But I can't walk away because my husband's a new Christian. And yet God worked in spite of the fact, kind of bringing it together to make it good, even though it wasn't so good to begin with. So there's all kinds of things he tends to kind of put his spin in the mentor.
Okay. Well, I heard two things from that. Sense of humor. We might ask you to be thinking about what else would you add to the circle here as far as mentoring. What would be important that you're looking for in a mentor or a mentee? The other thing you said is it took a while for them to find their rhythm as a pair, as a holy friendship. Some of you might have gone to Andy Ingram's workshop session yesterday. Andy's a pastor here on the district, and a couple of years ago he gave a rather discouraging pastor's report. He was just really honest that he was struggling, his church was struggling, and he didn't make any bones about it, which you really respect him for that. Sometimes we get up in these district assemblies and we want you to make sure you know everything's great and happy and sunny in our churches, and you know, he was vulnerable enough to say it wasn't. And another pastor on the district, Howard Plummer, contacted him that next week and said, I was really concerned about you. I heard you talking and I don't know you very well, but I would really like to invest in you. Andy told me yesterday they met a couple of times and he felt like they were going like this. They didn't have anything in common philosophy of ministry. They couldn't talk. And so about 6 months, 8 months later, he said Howard called him again. He just quit responding to Howard's emails to get together. He just felt like this wasn't a connect. It was not going to be a fit. You know, quit bugging me, Howard. And something on the district brought them together. And Howard said, I would like to meet with you again. I really want to invest with you. I feel this passion and call to invest in you. Would you meet me for, you know, dinner, lunch? And so Andy did do that again. And Howard said, kind of, what would make this work for us to meet together? And Andy said, I really need to know that I can be honest with you and give you pushback. And Howard's like, I would love that. That's where I thrive. And so they found the rhythm by figuring out, you know, what the boundaries were, or that the boundaries were more porous than they had thought originally. But it took them 8 months to a year to really figure out that this relationship could work. So, yeah, it may take a little while to find that rhythm. Some of us are fortunate, and maybe it happens right away, and others just take more work and patience. So, yeah, what else would you stick on this board here? What are the other elements that make for a good mentoring relationship?
I've always found it helpful when they've been where I'm headed.
Great. Someone with wisdom, a little ahead of the journey. Okay.
I would also say someone who has time for you. Because you can seek out someone who kind of has all of those things, but they're like so busy that they never have time. And I think that that's it. Really key part of a mentoring relationship.
Yeah, time. Yeah, someone who's accessible. What else? I do put up there, take the initiative. You know, the most they can say is no. And the most you could that could happen is it doesn't work out. So take the initiative, take the risk.
But don't let that be a hindrance if you feel they don't have time. Because I know with Katrina, she knows I'm very, very busy, and she will give me the hardest time over not returning her text in a good way, but she hangs with me, I'm surprised, and she affirms that in a way which says, I'll be patient with you, and I try to encourage that too. So it is hard. People have a lot of demands, but don't let that be a drawback if you're afraid they don't have time, you know, in that respect. You may find some people are more patient and more willing to walk alongside you than you realize.
Okay, good. Good pushback. Anything else that you'd add up there? I would say, you know, when people get married, I often like to challenge them by remembering that your spouse cannot fulfill 100% of your needs. And one mentor cannot fulfill 100% of your needs. So you will have several mentors in multiple settings. So just embrace that as a reality. That's not to say you shouldn't seek out one that's really important and meets with you regularly and invests in you regularly. But, you know, see the picture as fuller, a greater constellation of people investing in you and you in them. finding and identifying mentees. So, you know, some of you have come here today are a little older, and maybe you're wondering, you know, how do I invest in a younger person? You know, jazzed about this, I would really like to do it, but nobody's asking me. Well, let's just reverse the tables, take the initiative with another person like Howard did with Andy, and ask them. Take the risk of asking them. Sort of pools where you could find mentees, I would say, would be district events. When you're, you know, interacting with people and fellowship times and meals, there may be a young person that you really connect with and feel like you have a chemistry with. Here on the Nashville, well, now Mid-South District, we have mission area groups that meet in kind of regional zones. And would there be somebody in those kinds of groupings, zone groupings, that you would feel an affinity to with? Take the risk, ask them. The younger people in your church, especially think of college students and those transitioning from college to real life, if you will. These are kids that are just, you know, trying to figure out how to do life. They've moved from this dorm place of intense community and doing life together, and then all of a sudden they're in the real world where you're working 9 to 5 and you're going through the commute and you're trying to pay your rent, and they're like, what happened to my life? You know, is this it? Is this all there is? So think of those who are going through those transition points in their life too as particularly in need of your mentoring and love and care. The rules are similar for you. If you're seeking a mentee, be willing to be teachable with them, honest with them. See if you have a similar philosophy of ministry or life. You know, who are their favorite authors or books or movies, hobbies or interests? Is there a chemistry with them? So the rules are, they kind of go back and forth. So what do you do in your mentoring sessions? So that's another question. See if I can get back here to this. Here are a few suggestions. They're only suggestions. My three mentees here, they actually came to the table with what they wanted to do. They had the agenda ready to go. But if you don't have a specific agenda, again, these are just suggestions. Take them as you would. So I'm going back to some people who are really favorites of mine. Will Willimon here at Trevecca, I believe they use his book Pastor. And here's where I might need your help, Isaiah. Come on over here. Let me have you pull up some things here for me. I'm just going to pull up the table of contents for a few of these books so you get an idea of what kind of topics would be covered. So I think we need to go back up. I'm sorry, back down. Let's see if we can find the table of contents. I think we need to go to the top. So sorry. You just had it there. Great. All right. So this is, I think this is Worship as Pastoral Care. No, this is Willimon's pastor, right? So Why Pastors, Ministry for the 21st Century, Images of the Pastor's Priest, you know, Worship, Pastoral Care, Interpretation of Scripture, Servant of the Word, Preaching, Counselor, Christian Formation, Evangelism. So you get an opportunity, you could read a chapter and then get together with your mentee and talk about these things. A really rich discussion. I think this is the book that I used with Isaiah and others that were my mentees from Trevecca. And then Worship is Pastoral Care. Has anybody read that book? Have you guys read it? I just think it's such a wonderful piece about how you do pastoral care from the front of the church on Sunday mornings and in worship. But this could be a great conversation starter. Here are some of the chapter contents, talking about worship, liturgy. This may be something you'd want to stack on top of pastor. How about the book, The First 100 Days by Scott Daniels, Isaiah, if you can find that. You can just click those links off if you want from Willimon. We're trying to use the Mac and the Microsoft and Oh no, did I lose the bar? Oh well, just pull over here and we'll click off that link. There you go. Oh, that was it. Have any of you read Scott Daniels' First 100 Days? Okay. So those going into a new assignment, this would be a really great focal book to use, and the different chapters he talks about how to really become pastor and transition into that new place and space with beauty and pastoral care. I think we lost the table of contents, but just click on that. There you go. See what he covers. Yeah. Know what you don't know, help your family transition, establish clear expectations, preach well, secure some early wins, choose your battles carefully, transition accelerators, take care of yourself. Really good words of wisdom. And then lastly, I'll just put in here, let's see, I'll click that off. The MICA groups, I think I have that pulled up here. Maybe just click on the MICA groups is run by Fuller Theological Seminary. I've actually become a part of a MICA group in Kansas City recently. It's a gathering for peers, clergy peers, and it's a 12-month program. We meet for 3 hours, one day a month, and we talk about issues. Well, I think they have the subtitle of Preaching Justice, and maybe it's worship. But here are some of the different kinds of focal conversations we have. Communion, not the sacrament necessarily, but what it means to be in community with people in our congregation, outside of our congregation. Home, talked about this longing to be in a place where we're fully known and we fully know God and we're at peace. Fire, this is a conversation on passion and finding your passion, finding your niche, and where to lean into those passions. And then you see some of the other kind of topics. But this could be good for a mentor-mentee conversation as well. Now, you have to pay to participate in the MICA group, so this might be a bit more difficult, but you could at least use some of those categories as help. And then the last one I have, I was at a Lilly-sponsored conference not too long ago in Indianapolis, and I became aware of, I met a gentleman here from McGaffey School of Theology, and he had a whole curriculum, and I think I have the web link there, Isaiah, if you just want to reduce that a little bit. Yeah. There it is. Great. So here are some of the different topics, and this is online. You can just pull it right up in your browser. Leadership, financial calendar, effective coaching, spirituality for new ministers, time management. I mean, a lot of new pastors could use help with that. Pastoral care, conflict in ministry, communication, and you see the other kind of issues. And you can just link directly to those. So those could be conversation starters and curriculum, at least, a draft of something that you might want to cover in a year's time, topics of conversation. Have any of you used anything that you've found helpful? This is just a smattering of resources. Sarah, did you have anything specific, a curriculum that you guys would use?
No, we just talked
about life. Just, okay.
Yeah.
Much more casual. That's good too. Anybody else? Okay, well, we don't have to go on and on with this. Thank you, Isaiah, for your expert help there.